So this is an interview with Travis Bristol on July 5th, 2006. And if I could figure out where the mic is on this thing, I would record him. There it is. So Travis, why don't we start talking a little bit about the year in general, how the students did. Group discussions, things like that, and then talk a little bit more about maybe what you're thinking about for next year, and then some of your experiences in your teacher education program. But let's just start with, you know, as you kind of wrapped up the year, what was your general sense of it?
So the way that I end a class, students have to write these portfolios. I have them if you want, where they keep a portfolio of all their work, of different types of work, writing. And so, students had to defend their portfolios. I met with students individually. And the thing that most students said that they would have liked more of was group discussion. Hmm. A few students referred to, when I asked them a discussion that stood out most in their mind, the number one discussion was the interracial dating. Mm-hmm. The students said that it was really one of the first times that they were able to understand what their classmates were thinking. It was very, and it kind of struck me. I think next year, I definitely plan on making group discussion a more integral part of the classroom. I thought that we had some group discussion, but a lot more than I did last year. But students, the overwhelming response by students is that they really enjoyed group discussion. They felt that they learned the most when they were able to hear what their other classmates were saying, that they were able to think about a book or this literary device or a text-to-text connection from what other students said, that they somehow, after about 10 minutes of hearing my voice, they start to sort of drown me out. But when they just continuing to hear different entryways into a text was really enjoyable. So I think I end the year with realizing that I could have done more with group discussion. I think that the 2 days that you came in were probably the longest group discussions that we had, just because, I think those were really structured in many ways, and I didn't want to sort of end the discussion, but I end the year realizing that I want to think more about how to at least have sort of one sustained group discussion at least per week. Mm-hmm. So that's my thinking about the year, this the year's end.
I I feel like my students often say, oh, they like the discussions right. The most, and but even if they like it, do you have any evidence that they actually learned more?
So when I asked them to talk about, one student was talking about how they were able to, well, one example I was going to give was a student was talking about how she heard another student make a text-to-text connection, and that was not a connection that she would have made, or that by hearing another student suggest this literary device was clearly not something that they were necessarily thinking about. I guess to me that suggests some evidence of learning, because by listening and now seeing this literary device or seeing this connection, they have learned now to make these sorts of connections. Mm-hmm. But it's hard because I think because I always, you know, I'm learning how not to feel this way, but I feel like even though I say oftentimes that I'm the only that there are many teachers in the classroom,
uh-huh.
on many occasions I feel like I'm the only teacher in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when I allow other students to assume that teacher role,
mm-hmm.
and I think that comes vis-a-vis a group discussion,
mm-hmm.
then I must believe that learning can still take place,
mm-hmm.
in this group discussion setting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think yes.
And
I think yes.
What was the specific, do you remember the specific example, the text connection, or the
right. so
literary
it,
device?
It was, we were reading, we were reading Johnny Got His Gun,
uh-huh.
and Johnny was talking, you know, Donald Trump, you know, this Johnny, the protagonist in the text, talks about being blind and not being able to see physically, but being able to really see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And my student made a connection and said, well, you know, Ms. Bristol, this is kind of like what Emily Dickinson was saying in her poem about Oedipus,
mm-hmm.
about Oedipus, you know, that he was only able to see the truth after being blinded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just kind of, it really, and this was not, you know, not one of my higher school students, but, you know, she was able to, one of the last books we were reading in June,
mm-hmm.
make a connection to a text that we were reading in September.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and students in the class saying, oh, yeah, that's interesting. I never really thought about that. But that's just, it's more about allowing students a space to feel or to converse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what, you know, group discussion is. And so me attempting to do more of that.
Mm-hmm. But, so that wasn't, the discussion of Johnny Got His Gun, that wasn't one of the more sustained discussions you had.
No.
But that was, you did have a group discussion. What did that group discussion look like?
With
Johnny Got His Gun.
Johnny Got His Gun. So it was more of, we were asking students to think about text-to-world connections, right?
Mm-hmm.
More of, so I was forcing students to think about how they could apply Johnny Got His Gun, what's happening, you know, World War One to the war now.
Mm-hmm.
And this student, so in talking about that, this student made this text-to-text connection.
And how did you structure that discussion? So this was in May or June?
Right. So I decided to, you know, just sort of, you know, jot down some text to world connections that you think one could make. And,
uh-huh.
you know, so just share it, that kind of thing.
And did you structure it so that everybody had to talk, or did you just let them talk?
Right. It was
really?
Sort of, right. But I think by this time, at the end of the year, students are participating. There is no, you know, it's June. I think a lot of the classroom environment is such that it's okay. You know, you don't necessarily have to think about what people are going to say because the environment has been created that allows students to participate freely.
So you didn't need to say,
right?
Did everybody participate?
Right.
In that discussion?
Yeah. There was no need for the crutch, right? I think you and I were talking
right.
about that earlier. Right. I mean, by June, I mean, the students who did not speak, the students who, you know, students were participating.
Uh-huh.
And students were, I mean, I think you and I spoke about this, about, you know, this accountable talk.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked what, you know, Alexis said. I really agreed with, you know, it was just, it sort of just become part of the everyday group speech.
So they were referring to one another's
yeah.
comments.
Yeah.
Back
yeah.
and forth.
Yeah.
But were you participating more in these discussions than you did earlier? Because when I was there observing, you'd essentially structure the discussion and step back and let them take it. But when you didn't structure them so much, were you participating as well? Or?
Well, this discussion, I was calling, you know, one student said something and I would sort of call on another student to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you were still, you were in that mix.
Right.
I mean, were there other concerns or issues that you were thinking about at that point, or
that made me want to sort of still be in the mix?
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why I stayed was because clearly I think I selfishly also wanted to participate in the discussion because clearly I had a lot of, I said a lot by not saying a lot. right? By
what do you mean by that?
By maybe repeating a phrase that a student said that I wanted them to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was clear that I, you know, and I, as I tell students, all teachers have a bias, and I clearly wanted them to think that there are really strong connections to be made between the war now and what's going on with Johnny and what Trumbo was writing about. And so my saying anything, not saying anything, although saying something, was repeating sort of catchphrases, and then, okay, you said this, now I'm calling on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was more of a selfish, you know, desire to participate, but not participate, if you will.
I mean, are there ways that you try and intervene or support the discussion to get it further that you can't do when you absent yourself from it, or is it more that you're just trying to make sure some ideas get into play?
I think probably the latter. I mean, there were sort of really key points that I just wanted them to hit on. I mean, I think at the end of the day, for me, it was not having this, you know, long, sustained discussion was because it was June.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 3 weeks left of school, and I had to get tonight in a week. So I wanted them to at least make these connections. I wanted them to make the connections by themselves, but I also wanted to draw their attention to connections that they were making that I wanted them to make.
Mm-hmm.
By moving quickly through mm-hmm. the text,
mm-hmm.
which in, you know, in December when you were in, I think maybe in February when you were in, the end seems a lot further than mm-hmm. June, where I feel like I have time to have these long discussions.
Even though we also did talk about how hard it was to let it go, because I mean, then it, you know, Christmas Carol ended up being in January or something, right?
Right.
But what about, so they had these longer discussions of Othello and Ode to the West Wind. Do you have any evidence that they understood those texts or made deeper connections or deeper understandings of those texts than they did any of the others, or
through the discussions, or just generally with the text?
Well, I'm just trying to get a sense of what role the discussion might have played in their understanding. As far as you can tell, obviously it's speculation, but I mean, was the teaching of Ode to the West Wind or Othello more or less successful than other units that you pursue?
I think suggestion that students made, one of the reasons why they liked the Othello unit was because there was allow them to somehow be creative. So I think that made that unit a bit more successful than any other unit, because they were able to bring something else to the table. That's something, you know, their culture, the way that they saw the world,
mm-hmm.
That they were able to use, you know, their creative faculties in trying to decipher this text,
mm-hmm.
Othello. And so I think that, you know, that unit, and also when we read Canterbury Tales, and I had them do a modern version of the Canterbury Tales in my portfolio sessions, in the portfolio defenses, when I asked students what text they liked, I think the discussion and also the performance at the end sort of made those units more successful, I think, than others.
Successful because the students enjoyed more, or do you have, I mean, again,
evidence of learning?
Right.
And you're not distinguishing learning and comprehension? Well, and learning is
comprehension is an important part of learning, so that they understood these texts better, so that they, you know, their essays were structured better, right. They produced more evidence of right. using the language that you wanted them to use.
I think that one of the things that I've said to students is that some of the discussions that they had specifically, and I mean, I can't necessarily think about specific places mm-hmm. in the text, but the discussion of, for example, Ode to the West Wind, that they brought out elements of this poem that I myself had not even thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many ways, many of their comments were quite accurate. But then again, as I told students, when Shelley wrote Ode to the West Wind, I wasn't sitting next to him. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, there are some, one can make some natural conclusions about, or assumptions about what he's saying. But mm-hmm. Shelley, didn't sit next to me and tell me what he was writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in many ways, we're looking at this text the same way. And so, and so you can make these assumptions as long as they're grounded in something. And so my sense is that their comprehension increased because of their ability to build on their classmates' mm-hmm. comments.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand the dilemma, right? I mean, are these, activities done for activity's sake, which don't necessarily display learning in the classroom, and that's something that I struggle with. I think that's why, in many ways, I've sort of shied away from doing these sorts of quote-unquote activities. But I was really amazed at when students had to rewrite, I think it was Act 3, in their own vernacular, how they really understood. Right, because they were able to create their own stories, right? Because you have to, one, understand what the text is saying before you can sort of, translate it into something that is familiar to you.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, they were quite on. I think you have special, and I hope you get to
And so, just pick one to, whether it's that one or another one. So what impressed you in terms of the, what stood out in the essay that told you that they understood it? Can you remember one in particular?
Well, I'm thinking about, you mean, of the holiday assignment, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially Norman, but you said.
Uh-huh.
Say
what in general.
Globally.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what the student did was, she writes about being in Bangladesh and talking about two groups that have about the tension, right, of marrying someone from a different group, and clearly, Othello and Desdemona, who belong to two very different ethnic groups, and she was talking about two very different groups in Bangladesh and the tension that comes when one person marries someone else from here, but talking and going really, in many ways, just moving the language into something that's familiar to her, and of course, and also moving the culture, but at the end of the day, the meaning, right? Mm-hmm. The meanings and the lines are very similar to mm-hmm. what Shakespeare is doing. Really blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
Really blew me away. And so clearly, I mean, there is clear evidence of comprehension because mm-hmm. they can, one, comprehend and then translate into something that's familiar to them. But what the student did was, right, she owned Shakespeare, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she made it culturally relevant to her.
Mm-hmm.
That's the creative element. And mm-hmm. I tell students, that creativity is not something that I particularly specialize in. I don't think of myself as being a particularly creative person. I like to, let's talk about a line and analyze a line. I'm not necessarily, use your creative faculties and that sort of thing. But I realize that for many students, that gives them entryway and ownership to mm-hmm. something and makes it relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think, increases comprehension.
But creativity is one possibility that allows them to it. But were there ways, did you scaffold those assignments in Shakespeare? I mean, did they submit a draft of their vacation papers or their final essays?
So the first thing that students did was we worked on a line, right? So I think day one or day two, you'll see there, it's a line, right? How do you, rewrite, what is Iago saying, right? Now, if you were saying what Iago was saying, right, this one line, what would that sound like? And from that, we began working on parts, right? Mm-hmm. And then it finally moved to the vacation assignment was a speech, and then the culminating assignment was, here goes a line. I want you to try to extrapolate the sort of the theme. What do you think Shakespeare's saying? And then create a piece, create your own piece centered around this theme, which is centered around a line.
So that was the way you kind of built up to that final paper, and the vacation paper was one piece.
You mean the final culminating assignment, not the paper, right? The culminating assignment.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the performance rather, not because the essay was part of the assignment.
Right. Now, what was the relationship of the essay to the performance?
There wasn't a connection.
So then let's think about it. So that was sort of the translation from the vernacular and the performing the scenes in class and the developing the vacation paper. Those were all pieces that moved toward the the culminating assessment, the culminating performance. But then what about the final essay? Was there steps leading up to that, or drafts of that, or?
I mean, one of the things I asked them they need to first with the essay was to identify a theme and how Shakespeare communicates this theme in the text. And so, the performance, right, was trying to identify a theme. So I guess there was some sort of connection. I mean, globally, the essays that they wrote on Oedipus right before that, and Canterbury Tales sort of assisted with that. So I gave students some sort of prompt, and this was just another prompt. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't any connection per se to the Othello unit, but it was a scaffold essay on previous essays for texts that we had written.
And so can you just give me examples of what the other assignments were?
So the first assignment of Oedipus was to discuss the rise and fall of Oedipus. And so, how does Sophocles discuss the rise and fall of Oedipus, mm-hmm. Using textual evidence? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, in many ways, this is what that Othello essay was, right? Mm-hmm. Use textual evidence to support some idea, some theme, clearly, you've identified mm-hmm. In the text.
And then, so is all this leading up to the goal of, are these for the Regents exam, or are they, what's your goal with that set of assignments?
Allowing students to become analytical writers.
Uh-huh.
Right. How do we, analysis, in the end. I was not thinking Regents exam per se. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, expository writing,
Good expository writing.
Right.
And so kind of what was the next kind of assignment after Oedipus that was helping to move along this or develop along this continuum?
What was the assignment for Canterbury Tales? I think it was discuss satire. I can't remember, pick a character or and discuss how Chaucer is, and provide evidence, examples.
And did you see growth in terms of their analytical abilities over the course of the year?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. The first essay, I clearly walk students through. This, you need to have a topic sentence, you need to have a quote, this is how you by the end, the last essay that students wrote was an essay on the importance of being earnest, Oscar Wilde, the importance of being earnest. Uh-huh. It was, here goes the prompt, write the essay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it was much less supported.
Oh, absolutely.
And in terms of the feedback that you gave students following the Othello exam, I mean, how did you...
Exam or essay?
Their essay. I'm sorry, talking about the essays again. How did you share your assessment with them and help them take the next step in their analyses?
So what happens is, so the papers that they turned in, those papers were read by a classmate.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, we do peer reflections, peer revisions, rather, sorry. And I mean, a lot of my comments are, this is the claim that you're making. You're saying that this is this theme. How are you... Yeah, it's unclear how you describe Shakespeare manifesting this theme in this text. I want you to go back, look for examples. I'm not sure your quote proves this theme. I mean, it's sort of very, you know, on the paper. Go back, rewrite, look at this. Some students, about half of students had to, you know, rewrite their essays. Because that was December, January.
Yeah.
So that's probably the third essay that they had written for me for the year.
Mm-hmm.
January, early January, right.
So what's the sequence? You give them feedback, and then they discuss the feedback with a peer, and then they rewrite it, or...?
No, so they write the essay,
uh-huh.
And then they sit for about a 45 minutes with a peer who edits their paper based on... I give them a peer edit sheet.
Uh-huh.
Look at this thesis statement. Does this thesis statement give you a clear sense of what your partner is intending to argue?
Mm-hmm.
Look at their topic sentence. Look at the quote.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the conclusion. That sort of, you know. And so they fill out this peer edit sheet,
mm-hmm.
and BS based on the comments of their classmate, they go back and they revise their essay,
mm-hmm.
and then about 2 or 3 days later, they turn the essay into me.
Mm-hmm.
The students who don't do so well, I ask to, you know, normally ask them to rewrite their essays.
Mm-hmm. Based on feedback you give them?
Right.
Or
based on not necessarily meeting some criteria that I've set, right?
Uh-huh.
So I use 6+1, three categories of that: organization, ideas, and content. And conventions.
Uh-huh.
And so students who score 10 out of 15, or 9, I normally ask them to go back and rewrite those essays.
And where's that rubric from? Or
6+1?
Yeah.
I thought it was, it's a rubric that I found in California. I guess it's used a lot in California. I thought it was, I don't know. 6+1.
That's interesting. Yeah. No. And then, but so basically, based on that rubric, you just tell them that. But you don't give them specific feedback beyond that in terms of how to improve it. It's up to them to figure that out.
No. I'm making comments on the page. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as I. Oh right. Because I gave you a clean copy. I didn't give you a copy of their comment. Oh no. I mean, I am circling. I'm marking up their paper.
That's probably what we should have gotten the not clean copy.
Okay.
It would have been interesting. But
I asked, but she said that she wanted that without my comments.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I may have some. I mean, I
well, we can see. But the so you talked a little bit about the discussion. You felt like they made some progress in their analytical abilities over the course of the year.
Right.
Other areas in which they did or didn't develop as well as.
I mean, I, by the end of the year, they were identifying literary devices. I mean,
mm-hmm.
The students came in only knowing about symbolism,
mm-hmm.
right? Everything's a symbol, this is a symbol, this is a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
I think by the end of the year, they were talking about metaphor and simile and alliteration and
mm-hmm.
assonance. I mean, they were, it was really part of everyday speak, if you will,
mm-hmm.
in the class, because it was something that I really, if you look at the exam that I gave them, right, you had to identify the term and tell me why that's a term. I mean, It was because one of the things I emphasized with students is that you must understand the language of literature,
mm-hmm.
And this is the language of literature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think by the end, students really, I mean, they just, it was something that they really understood,
mm-hmm.
And employed, you know, during class discussion.
Mm-hmm.
When they read Oscar Wilde, they understood that this was irony. They understood mm-hmm. this was satire. It was clear.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little, I mean, it was kind of fuzzy when we talked about it with Chaucer in October,
mm-hmm.
but by May, they understood the satire, mm-hmm. and they laughed with Wilde, and
mm-hmm.
they would tell you they loved the importance of being earnest because they understood the satire. Chaucer was kind of, well, mm-hmm. when Chaucer's talking about the nun and her showing her breasts, how is that, you know, I don't understand, Mr. Bristow, that's not right. But by Oscar Wilde, algae, they got it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how did that compare to the previous year?
I never taught Oscar Wilde.
But just in general, in terms of their performance and their ability to understand these literary terms and use these literary terms.
Well, I think if I had the ability to only teach English...
In the previous
years. Yes.
Right. You were doing both the combined.
English and social studies.
Right.
Which,
so
you
that
know,
makes it hard to compare.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think I gave some of my students some of this language, some literary devices, but it was hard because a lot of my emphasis was on the global regions, 10th
mm-hmm.
grade. So.
Right. And the global regions is 10th grade and the English regions is 11th grade.
Right. So I can I have room, if you will, to play around.
Mm-hmm. And anything from the year that you're looking at the portfolios, that any goals that weren't as well achieved as you'd hoped?
I mean, there were clearly, there were some students who failed. And so, that's always hard. And disturbing. There were clearly, in terms of goals of some, some students necessarily didn't do much. But I think overall, students were, they really became critical thinkers. I had one student, I won't mention name, who said she was an Asian student who came into the class very upset for the first marking period when I gave her an 85,
mm-hmm.
Because she had only received 90s. And when we got to Johnny Got His Gun, she said, Mr. Bristow, for the first time, I started really caring about the world. I never really cared, right? It was never really important. It was about, getting really good grades. But somehow in this class, Johnny Got His Gun, made me realize that these things are going on now. And I said, well, I guess now I can retire, right? Because, and so I think, at the end of the day, I think, and of course, I struggle with saying that my number one goal is critical thinking because it sounds like some, socialist sort of approach to teaching, as if there aren't specific skills, but I really believe that
there are specific skills.
Well, or that critical thinking happens outside of
right.
teaching metaphor and simile and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that by and large that most of my students have become critical thinkers,
mm-hmm.
where they can read a text, they can understand what's going on, make connections with other texts, make connections with the world, and now have the power to keep on learning
mm-hmm.
the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it they didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson on what is a metonym, that didn't go over so well. But they're critical thinkers, and so they'll get there. They'll learn metonym.
Mm-hmm.
They'll learn other devices.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall goal of being a critical thinker, which I set out to mm-hmm. accomplish, by and large, I think that was accomplished.
What about, thinking ahead to next year? So you talked a little bit about, you wanted to incorporate more group discussion? I mean, obviously, it's you're not planning for next year yet.
Right.
You haven't sat down to do the specifics, but generally, I mean, have you thought about what changes you might make if you can?
Well, I'm hoping that the principal does not necessarily change the way that we teach the courses, and so I'm not clear enough to change the books that I teach.
And she might.
She may. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So right now, what's done is if they're studying a region, let's say, then I teach the region.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some people in the history department are thinking about teaching the world chronologically. So we do the ancient world. So
mm-hmm.
we do Greece and the Aztecs sort of all kind of together,
mm-hmm.
Which really messes because it'd be hard to do full-length text. That's another conversation in and of itself. But maybe some independent reading.
Mm-hmm.
I did not get to. You said goals.
Well, I mean, not necessarily in terms of your, but if you're planning on changing your goals, I was thinking about things that you learned from this year that you wanted to
right
now make some changes for next year to build on what you've learned.
Well, I think definitely, you know, some of this creative element of allowing students to use some of their creative intelligence, if you will, in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I read something that said, you know, teach and, you know, if students don't learn this way, teach them the way that they can learn or something like that. And, of course, I am not a creative person, but I was surprised at how many of my students enjoyed doing or working or using their creative intelligence in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
and how my dislike of creativity disallow students from employing their creative elements. And so I'm thinking at least every unit having some activity or some assignment that allows students to use their creativity while also demonstrating their comprehension of a specific text.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about in terms of discussion? Have you thought anything differently about sort of how to create that atmosphere or how to get those discussions going? Or,
well, I think I'll definitely start earlier on, like in September, with what you observed in December,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think in September and October, if students are, you know, taking notes of what other students are saying, or you know, of course, throwing that piece of paper in the room. Then, by January and February, their discussions will look like what the discussions in June were like,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it was really, it was in many ways, you know, quote unquote, natural,
mm-hmm.
and a natural expectation for everyone.
So you see yourself doing the same things, but perhaps earlier.
Yeah, September, October, maybe.
Anything else in particular that you want to change or think about, areas where they weren't as strong that you feel like you need to put in place more support or structure?
Well, I was actually looking at Yvonne's website,
mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I didn't implement the class scrub, I think, as well as she does, so all I do is I have students come up. And that wasn't particularly structured. It was really I played with it last year. This year was a lot better because I was doing it every day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of days last year, my first year teaching, I would forget.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I mean, we're doing it every single day, and students, you know, were expected, and they knew because there was a list.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actually keeping an actual log where students write up what they're going to say and put it in there, put it
mm-hmm.
in a notebook so that, you know, any day a student can come in and see exactly what we did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that she did that I want to do. So I think building on, because I really believe in the class scribe. I think it, you know, makes a lot of sense because, I mean, there, you know, students were absent, right? I think looked and were, you know, knew that they could find out what was going on because there was a class scribe, but also, you know, actually creating a book where students are supposed to put in their notes, where anyone can look, mm-hmm. find what was missed.
Mm-hmm. When were you looking at Yvonne?
Over the weekend. I mean, as I was looking at my. So you said that
the draft. So you saw the link to Yvonne's site and went back to it. Now, was that the first time that you'd seen it? When was the last time you looked at Yvonne's website before that? In Pam's class?
Probably. Uh-huh. Right, where I saw the class scribe, and I love the idea of the class scribe. That's why I started to do it.
Uh-huh.
But I only vaguely remember. I mean, how she implemented it. All I remembered was there's someone coming in front of the class and speaking. But actually, looking at it again, I realized that that she actually had a log of what was said, mm-hmm. And students actually had to appear and put it in there. Mm-hmm. So. I think it's a brilliant, really mm-hmm. fantastic idea.
Did you look more at, was that the only thing you looked at, or did you also look at other parts of the discussion, anything else?
That was the only thing.
Do you know why? I mean, this is something we're still trying to figure out. Did you have the link, or you didn't have the link? If you'd had the link for Yvonne's site, would you have gone back to look at it, or?
Last year I was telling the coach at the school that she was doing this accountable talk workshop mm-hmm. with us, the PD. And I was telling her that in grad school, I saw a site by a woman who did a lot of this accountable talk. And I couldn't find the website because I was trying to show it to her, saying that I learned some of the same sort of strategies. Because I think a lot of my colleagues couldn't visualize what she was trying to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure if I had it, I'd be able to actually visualize what the coach was theoretically presenting to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, just want to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. But anything else about the year, or have you looked at the sites that you wanted to add, or that you haven't told me already about things that surprised you about this year, or things you noted and or learned over the course of the year?
I mean, the Ode to the West Wind. I mean, I think I mentioned this to you. I mean, I'd be very interested to see what came up of, what had become of the videotape. But, I mean, I was just really taken aback. I mean, because I think ideally, we all believe that our students are superstars and they're amazing. But I didn't know what to expect when I gave them Shelley's Ode to the West Wind. I mean, because they're 10th graders, who read, at grade level, slightly below grade level. I mean, they are, and this is Shelley. This is not... I mean, this is 11th grade honors level or honors level 10th grade work. This is, by far, I mean, I didn't do anything close to this. The first time I met Shelley, even heard of Shelley, was in my sophomore year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And I had great difficulty understanding Shelley in my sophomore year of college. And just to see my students, sitting down, making or attempting to make sense, and then making sense of this poem was, one of, the greatest experiences that I've had on this journey
mm-hmm.
as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were, as I told you that day, I was really proud of them because, mm-hmm. I mean, these are, in many ways, just average students, right, who are, who struggle with reading and writing and, when they do their choral reading, not all, their cadence is somewhat slow and it's, they're just average.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see and observe them pick apart Shelley and make these connections with what they thought his life was like, it was just, with some scaffolding, right?
Mm-hmm.
All students can do this,
mm-hmm.
was what I sort of...
And in thinking about, I mean, is there a particular scaffolding you have in mind now that is being particularly crucial to getting them to that point?
I mean, clearly I know that I could not have started the year with the romantic period
mm-hmm.
And the romantics. I mean, I guess it really has to go back, you know, to Oedipus and to Emily Dickinson's poem. I forget the number. I think it's 1129 or something, where my students did not believe that Dickinson was alluding to Oedipus when she was, you know, tell the truth, but tell us, plants, its essence, circuit lies, right? My students did not believe, you know, they just thought that she was just sort of writing this outside of, mm-hmm. without thinking about this. And so I think at that point where I was able to convince them, well, look at what she's saying about when you know the truth, that, you know, when you know all the truth, you become blind. I mean, clearly, right, in this text, Oedipus, our hero, when he finds all the truth, he is blind, like mm-hmm. Tiresias. There is, you know, she's, you know, this is what people do, right? And when, you know, something is known, people write about it. They make allusions to it. And I think it was at that point they began to see that there was more to the page.
Mm-hmm.
This level two, mm-hmm. which they have sort of become to adopt and, mm-hmm. and say, every, you know, now I'm going to give you my level two, Mr. Bristow. I think that was, in September, my students believing in me that there was more, I think, and allowed them to, and I think, you know, by the time I got to the romantic period, what I began telling them was that, as I was mentioning earlier, these poets did not sit down and write this poem with me. I think because I think for a lot, they thought that, you know, that they necessarily, they didn't know. They thought that I had all the knowledge, and I, you know, told them, Keats did not sit down and write, you know, this poem with me. Blake did not sit down, you know. And so I am doing many of the same things that that you can do, right, by using my outside information to try to understand the text. And I think that was just the confidence,
mm-hmm.
I think. I think it's in them because we all have imagination. I mean, we all can, you know.
Right.
I think that I just somehow began to give them some of this confidence to really go and explore the text.
But you're really emphasizing then that it's the way that you structured the content. So when did they read Emily Dickinson with you?
After they read the Oedipus. After they read Oedipus.
And so, in a sense, so reading Oedipus and reading Emily Dickinson, you're trying to get them to understand there's a second level to these pieces.
Right.
That's not the literal level.
Right.
That there are messages and understandings that one can achieve beyond the literal level.
Right.
But you're also suggesting that something else you're trying to get them to learn is that there isn't a single answer to
right.
this, right? That it's not, that you as the teacher don't have this answer, that they have the power to
right.
do. Is that?
Right. They have the, because I'm not the only teacher in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
Right. That, you know, I may be older than them, I may, you know, have a little bit more experience on this journey, but they can do the same sorts of level two thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking beneath the surface, if you will,
mm-hmm.
As I'm doing, because you have the vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
right, to do that.
Right. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I have a better understanding now, I think, of the way, you know, so that, you know, you're trying to help them develop this recognition of level two. You're trying to help them develop the language and the vocabulary and the literary skills and tools to,
right.
to get at what's at level two. You're trying to deal with this, you know, the misperception or about, you know, the right answer or a single truth to the text.
Right.
And then you're trying to help them learn how to talk about, I mean,
right.
to have those discussions. Is that, I mean,
that's clearly, I never thought about it. I never sort of made it coalesce and sound like that. Because in my mind, I guess like my Othello unit, a lot of things are all over the place, kind of, mm-hmm. many ways. But yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Yeah, well, it's really, I appreciate the chance to have these conversations mm-hmm. with you. And, you know, all this, it begins to fill in the picture of, you know, how the Canterbury Tales and Oedipus yeah. and these different pieces kind of fit in. But I really appreciate your taking the time to do this. And so I'm sure we'll continue the discussion
okay.
at another point, but I'll turn this off.